Hello, you fine folks out there. Welcome back to the Garden State of Hockey podcast. If you're wondering why we're doing an episode, it's because there's always stuff to talk about, because this year is crazy and will continue to be crazy. And next year will, in turn, be crazy and continue to be crazy. So, without any further ado, my name is Dan Rozelle, and I'm joined by John Fisher. How are you doing, John?
I'm trying my best to stay sane in a crazy world.
Yes, and as we all are, and as the Devils will have to do when they manage their cap situation for the next couple of years in terms of managing players that are coming down the pipeline. Now, we've seen a bunch of lists that are floating around where the Devils prospect pool is ranked pretty highly, and that is not, you know, entirely because of quality. That's also because of quantity, and the Devils get a lot of shots at the board as well. But when you have a lot of quantity, that means you have some tough decisions to make at some point here, and that point is coming up very rapidly for the Devils in terms of next year and the one after. We'll only focus on next year for now, since the Devils have a lot of prospects that'll be eligible for either extensions or to be let go by the organization to either get redrafted or seek their fortunes with a new team. So that's who we're going to talk about today. We're going to talk about the list of players that are going to be a decision for the Devils to make next year, and a list of prospects that the Devils have to think about and account for when they're handing out their 50 contracts. So, John, how do you want to start us off here? Do you want to go by position, or do you want to go by influence on the team, basically?
Well, I want to go by position, but I want to highlight a point that you briefly mentioned that I think a lot of fans, myself included, sometimes overlook, is the fact that an NHL team is limited to having 50 standard player contracts. So in order to be eligible to play in the NHL, you need to have a standard player contract, whether that's an entry level contract, a standard contract, a 35 and over contract, whatever. You need a contract, but you're limited to 50 of them. And the thing about prospects is that there are some ways to get around this. Like, entry level contracts can slide if you're 18 and 19 years old to another year. Or when you draft a player, you really draft their rights, so you don't have to sign them right away. So, for example, Alexander Holtz doesn't need a contract right now, which is fine because he's already signed with Djurgårdens in Sweden anyway. However, the reason why we're discussing this is because the Devils have a lot of young players in the system. Our top 25 under 25 list has 52 names on it, Dan. 52 players that you can all go and vote on if you go to the site. The link to the community surveys on the site will be open until Friday. So when this episode gets posted, you still have a chance to get your say in there about the who you think the best Devils under the age of 25 are in the system. But as you said, with a lot of quantity means you need a lot of tough decisions, and they're starting to come up. And on top of that, as mentioned at the top of the show, this is a crazy world. Do you think we're going to have a normal 2021 season? I will answer that question for you, Dan. No, we won't, because we aren't having one right now.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that we're not currently in the first couple of games of the season, and the fact that training camp is slated for December with an eye towards a New Year's Day start, you know, you can have your eye towards it as much as you want. The world has different plans, so let's see how all that is negotiated. But in terms of what the Devils can control and know they have to control, let's tackle some of these players.
Right. So let's start with the back end. I'm going to talk about first players under contract. So right now we're talking about players who have a contract right now, whether it's an entry level contract or a standard contract. Players who are already signed, whose contracts are going to end after next season, that aren't the big names. So we're not talking about Palmieri. We're not talking about Gusev. We're not talking about Zajac. We are starting off with Josh Jacobs, everybody's favorite right-handed defenseman of Binghamton.
So Josh Jacobs got some games in New Jersey towards the end of the season when things had already fallen apart. And
yep,
his audition was brief and, to be honest, not quite that memorable, but he was valuable in Binghamton and was a reliable defender for them. So the decision they have to make with him, where does he fit in and who else is coming down the pike? Well, you have Ty Smith, Kevin Ball, and we're all hoping that Ryan Murray can be healthy. So Josh Jacobs, it depends. It depends what they want from Binghamton here and how long he's willing to be there.
Well, that's the thing. They just re-signed Jacobs to a standard two-way contract. So in a way, he's 24 years old. He's beyond his ELC years. I think the writing, if I'm Josh Jacobs, I think the writing is on the wall here to say, your career may pan out to be an AHL guy with an NHL contract. So what that means is that you're going to be that veteran type of player that AHL teams do need to be successful, because you don't want to have your youth just get washed in every AHL game. You need some veterans to stay competitive. And I think Josh Jacobs is in that role, since he's played all of three New Jersey games since being drafted in 2014. Mm-hmm. So I think the good news for him is that the Devils just re-signed him. So I think it's clear that they like him. But given the fact that we have no idea if there's going to be even an AHL season, kind of hurts the cause of whether or not, on the post on Sunday that this is sort of referencing here, I call these players that they have something to prove. Well, you can't prove anything if you have nothing to play with.
Right.
So, but the fact that he just got re-signed, he's been in the system for a while, and Fitzgerald is definitely familiar with him because he's seen him in Binghamton for several years now. I think he's got a decent chance to be that AHL veteran if he wants to be that. But I think, it's really up to Jacobs. He'll be an RFA, I believe. So he doesn't have a lot of say in the matter, but he could just not sign the qualifying offer and just move on himself. But I think the Devils would like him, provided that, that he's fine with just staying in Binghamton.
Yeah, he's like the definition of a black ace once the Devils are able to field those again when they make the playoffs.
Yeah, I'd say so. But, here's a player who I don't think they're going to keep. Mm-hmm. We're talking about left-handed defenseman Colby Sissons. Mm-hmm. So he's a guy who scored a whole bunch of points with Swift Current, most notably 71 points in 72 games in his final season with Swift Current in the Western Hockey League. He had 23 points in 21 playoff games. So there was a thought that, hey, this guy could be a late bloomer. And then he played 38 games in Binghamton and 9 games at Adirondack in the ECHL in his first pro season. Okay, not ideal, but it's a start. And then last season, he played 48 games with Adirondack and only just 6 with Binghamton. So that's not positive progress here. This is where the pandemic and the lack of certainty of whether or not we're going to have a 2020-21 season for the AHL really hurts some players. And Sissons is one of them, because if he could stay in the AHL, that would help his cause dramatically to get an NHL contract from New Jersey again. But if he ends, but without that season, or if he ends up just primarily playing in Adirondack, I don't see the point of keeping him.
Yeah, and especially because there's just so many young defensemen still in the, I would say younger defensemen still in the system.
Oh yeah, they're coming in too. So I mean, you have to make some room, and I think Sissons is definitely on the cutting block.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's fair too. Yeah, and he has a slightly different case than Josh Jacobs, because he is waivers exempt. He's a bit younger that way, but like, I don't know. I don't think it's really worth handing out a contract they can't afford to hand out.
Exactly. Waivers only matters if you're going to play in the NHL, yeah. And nothing Sissons has done has secured him in the AHL.
Right, right.
Okay. You know who else may be on the chopping block as well?
Uh-huh.
The throw-in from the Andy Green deal, David Quenneville, the right-handed defenseman standing at all of 5'8" and definitely not 200 pounds.
Yeah, so the Devils replaced Quenneville on their roster, John, with David, and when the deal happened for Andy Green, the key piece was definitely not David Quenneville. It was the second round draft pick that the Devils got for Green.
Yes, absolutely. And, Quenneville, similar to Sissons, scored a whole bunch of points in the Western Hockey League. But similar to Sissons, he split his first pro season between Bridgeport and Worcester in the ECHL. That's the Islanders ECHL affiliate. And when he was dealt to New Jersey, he did play in 7 games for the Binghamton Devils. However, with the pandemic cutting short that season, obviously he wasn't going to get more time to see whether or not he was worth keeping around. And similar to Sissons, this is another case where not knowing what your season is going to be is really going to hurt your cause. In Quenneville's case, and maybe in Sisson's case, the ECHL is planning to restart, but they're doing some sort of weird staggering schedule where half the league is starting in December and half of them is starting in January. Mm-hmm. Adirondack is starting in January, by the way. So, but if he doesn't show a lot of improvement, or there's no season, and even if he shows some improvement, I'm just not confident he gets qualified. I think he was, as mentioned, he was just the throw in to make the deal work somewhat.
Yeah, and then the Devils went out and, drafted a defenseman, and also they have a bunch of people still waiting on still on their ELCs and still, again, younger and look more promising with a more direct path to the NHL. So why bother?
Exactly. But now let's move on to somebody who I do think will get a second contract. It's your favorite Swiss goaltender that isn't named Akira Schmid. It's Gillesen. He made his North American debut last season and his NHL debut, appearing in two games for New Jersey, thanks to injuries to Blackwood and Schneider at the
Right.
time. He did play in 27 games with Binghamton. He posted up a 90.1 overall save percentage, which isn't that impressive on its own, but it was better than the other rookie that, well, technical rookie, I should say, in Binghamton last season. Jeff and his panel, if you read all about the jersey, Jeff Ulmer focuses on the Binghamton Devils, and he has a panel of people that rates and grades all the players on the team by quarter. And they thought that Sen was the team's best rookie last season, their most improved player as the season went on, and their best goaltender. So, they're very big on Sen. He is 24. He's not a young man, and it's telling that the Devils went out and got Scott Wedgwood instead of just saying, "Hey, Sen, you're now the number three goalie for sure." But I think Sen can definitely hang and bang with Wedgwood in the net, so to speak. I think that's a competitive spot for him. So I think even if there isn't an NHL season, I do think the organization has to like what they're seeing so far. I think because of the goalie depth as well, Sen is the best of not a lot of great options at the moment. So I think he's getting a second contract short of a massively terrible season.
So Sen and Wedgwood are going to split the net in Binghamton. We're aware of that. The person they're holding off is the one that the Devils just drafted, in Nico Daws. I think more realistically, they expect him to compete for that Binghamton job, let's say in, 2 to 3 years.
Exactly. Nico Daws has, the Devils have their rights until 2022, so they can afford to wait. And as a wise man once said, if you have time, you use it.
Exactly. And with goalies especially, the situation is that they do take longer to develop, and that's what the Devils are kind of relying on. And also, you have to remember that they're going to have to expose someone for the expansion draft as well. When it comes to goaltenders, they're more than likely keeping Blackwood, but
Oh,
there's
definitely.
going to be some names that are out there that they have to make sure are exposed. And if it does end up being Crawford, because his contract does run 2 years, they're going to need to be pretty confident in what they have in the pipeline. And if Sen is the most improved player in Binghamton, then great. He does have that little bit of NHL experience to go with as well. So, Gillesen, congratulations. You made the cut.
Yes. You know who I don't think will make the cut, Dan?
Who's that?
Evan Cormier. He's technically a rookie last season with Binghamton. I say technically because he did play in 15 games in 2018-19 with Binghamton. So I don't know how he was recognized as a rookie again by the AHL. I guess he didn't meet the games played cutoff,
Right.
similar to Blackwood. However, Cormier has had a rough time last season. First and foremost, he wasn't signed right away outside of junior. He actually was signed out of Canadian college hockey with University of Guelph. And you might not know this, Dan, but not a lot of players get signed out of Canadian college
Yeah, he's had
hockey.
quite a journey. He played in a bunch of different leagues.
Yes, he did. Now, he did play a bunch in the ECHL in the last 2 seasons, which for a goalie is not that bad because as a goalie, you need to be playing somewhere. It's better. It's not like a skater where an ECHL's role is basically saying you're not good enough for the AHL. For the goalie, it's like, well, you need to play. So go here and play.
Right.
The problem is he was bad last year in both Binghamton and in Adirondack. He posted up an 88.3 save percentage overall in 11 games with Binghamton last season, and then 15 games with the Thunder. He posted up an 88.5%. That's not good. And unfortunately, whereas Sen is older, he's still on his ELC. That'll end after the season. Cormier is a bit younger, but because he's that guy that was splitting time between the AHL and ECHL hockey, he's got to be seen as the bottom man among the Devils' goaltender depth chart. And when you consider that Akira Schmid is about to turn 20, or he is 20 right now, Nico Daws is going to turn 20 in December. You eventually have later down the pike, Cole Brady, even though he's going to go to college presumably for 4 years. So, but the point is that Cormier's spot is more in contention in the near future, and I think the Devils may look at his production, and if he doesn't show a massive improvement in this season, I think they let him go.
And that's like fair, because again, we keep mentioning the same goaltenders that are kind of ahead of him in the pecking order, and in terms of where the Devils feel their organizational depth is headed. I think the Dawes pick really signaled to a lot of these other goalies that like they're not entirely satisfied with what they've been seeing, and they want to throw someone else in the pipeline as well.
Exactly. So let's continue on the pipeline, Dan, and let's look at forwards.
Okay.
These are forwards who are signed, and we're going to start with guys who are currently not playing.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to talk about first Binghamton's leading scorer among players who only played in Binghamton last season. Everybody's favorite energy fourth line forward. That's an inside joke, by the way. Brett Cini.
Oh, boy.
So he got re-signed, which is always a good sign. And he legitimately was the best, arguably the best forward in Binghamton last season. He was their top scorer. He was on their first line. I don't think he has a lot of a future in the NHL, Dan, beyond being just a call-up guy.
Yeah.
You know, he's that, you know, similar to John Quenneville, he's a quadruple A player. You know, he's definitely good at the AHL level, but not going to be good enough at the NHL level. And he's 24. It's not like he's going to get that much better anytime soon. So similar to Josh Jacobs, as long as he's willing to oblige and the Devils are willing to keep obliging him with one season, two-way deals to keep him happy and keep him in the AHL, I think he gets signed. Even if there is no AHL season. So I think they like him, but not enough to say, here's a roster spot.
He's kind of doing the Blake Spears path where you make the team out of camp and then do nothing in particular and then go back to Binghamton and still perform pretty well. But he was definitely better than Spears when Spears was sent back down.
Oh, definitely.
But, the Devils just drafted four centers. This is a signal to him as well that's like, okay, if you're going to take that next step, you better do it in the next couple of years because all these guys are coming. All these guys may be playing in juniors now, maybe playing in other leagues now across the world, but he's listed here on, I'm looking at Cap Friendly right now, as a center slash left wing, and the Devils just drafted four centers and a pretty high-profile left wing. So you gotta do something here to show yourself, but I'm okay with keeping him in Binghamton if that's the engine driving their team specifically.
Exactly. And I'm glad you mentioned the number of centers, Dan, because that also impacts another guy on this list,
mm-hmm.
or actually two more guys on this list that are going to be a little more contentious, a little more controversial, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about the lesser known player, and then we'll talk about the more known player. Once I say his name, you're going to know exactly why I'm doing it that way.
Okay.
The lesser known player is Brandon Gignac.
Mm-hmm.
At the time in 2016, he was seen as a shrewd third round pick. One of those guys are like, ooh, he was available and you picked him up. Good pick. You know, all the draft, you know, prospect people online are going, yeah, that's a good move. I like it. Yeah. High fives and everything. Unfortunately, his pro career has been very up and down. His first season in the pros was cut short due to a significant injury, but his second season showed some promise where he put up 36 points in 66 games on a very bad Binghamton team. And he did make his NHL debut by playing one game for New Jersey. So that's a good way to bounce back, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, last season did not go so well.
Yeah.
He only put up 14 points in 36 games. And as Jeff and his panel noted, he was a healthy scratch several times. He was kept out of the lineup for several nights. And it's not good when the AHL followers, the AHL writer in Jeff are questioning his future in Binghamton. So by logic, that means he doesn't have much of an NHL future. So, and what's even hurting him more is that there are other forwards in Binghamton who are playing somewhere right now, whereas Gignac is just idle, like a lot of the other North American-based players. So he is a center. He's had some issues. His career hasn't been that productive. His third season in the AHL did not go well at all. You know, without an AHL season to show he can prove himself, I think the Devils let him go.
Yeah, he's also someone who's, you know, at the time of the draft, sure, he might be a shrewd pick, but then he got a pretty serious leg injury. And from that point on, it's been kind of hard for him to get in the lineup and stay in the lineup. And that's understandable. It's something that, you know, it's difficult to recover from when the sport involves using your legs 150% of the time.
Exactly.
So
you need your legs.
You need your legs. And again, he is a center, and the Devils just drafted, and I want to reiterate, four of them. So they're clearly looking to address the center depth here, and he may not make the cut.
Right. Now, this here's the player who does have good legs, but he doesn't have a whole lot much else so far.
Mm-hmm.
And his name is Michael McLeod.
Oh, okay. So McLeod had chances to show something in the NHL. He had chances to show something in Binghamton and underperformed, I would say, in both places. But his buddy, Nate Bastian, was kind of energized by his presence in Binghamton is probably the best compliment I have for him.
Right. So McLeod has played 33 games with New Jersey over the last two seasons.
Mm-hmm.
And they primarily use them as a center. Like the broadcast actually highlighted that point constantly when McLeod would be in these games. It would say the Devils want to see him at center. And I'm just sitting here watching him going, just put him to wing. He's getting destroyed at center.
Mm-hmm.
But they want to use him as a center. Fine. But again, I'm going back to Jeff and his panel, since they do the quarter evaluations at all about the jersey. And even they notice that his consistency isn't always there, and they just expect a lot more for a guy who is a former first-round pick. And again, he's in his third season of pro hockey here. You know, he only put up 21 points in 49 games. And yes, points aren't everything, Dan. You know, points are not the same as performance. But it is telling that Bastian outscored him, Sini outscored him, Nick Merkley was close to outscoring him in his time in Binghamton alone. You know, there are a whole bunch of players that did more on the box score than McLeod. And again, points aren't everything. But when you are a former first round pick and the organization wants to have some hope for you as an NHL player in the future, the expectation is that you go out there and you produce at the minor league level. And he just hasn't been that way. I'm getting a real John Quenneville vibe for him where I'm just wondering, when is it going to happen?
Yeah.
Is he an NHL player or not? I mean, he's probably going to get a second contract just because I don't think the Devils, and most NHL teams don't do this, they don't give up on former first-round picks after the first contract ends. Like, that's just not done. But, you know, if there's no AHL season in 2021, I really hope he gets to play somewhere because he's got to show that he has a future because he may get that second contract, but he may not get a third contract.
Well, it's not just first-round pick. It's like first half of the first round. You know?
Yeah, he's 12th overall.
Right. So it's not like someone they just took a shot at, you know, like 24th or something like that. This is someone who, first of all, they traded down for him with Ottawa so that Ottawa could take, I think it was Brown.
Logan Brown.
Yeah. And then they took McLeod, and everyone's like, ooh, okay, they got a speedster here. And if speed's the only thing you offer, then you're basically just Miles Wood in sheep's clothing. So, you know, there's not much that they can. If they can't expect much from him, then again, that four-center draft is a big sign that the Devils are looking to see something more from him specifically before they give him another contract. And I think a lot of this has to do with, like, taking Dawson Mercer. Like, when Dawson Mercer was available at 18, I think that definitely indicated a lot of the Devils' direction moving forward. I don't think they expected him necessarily to still be there.
No.
And so just adding that one player is a sign to all these centers that's like, okay, we got this guy that we didn't expect to be there at this spot. Show us what you got, or there's no reason for us to give you another contract. But yeah, it is hard to justify giving up on a first-round investment and the first, like I said, the first half of the first round as well.
Right. So let's talk about a player that McLeod is friends with, so much so that the Devils drafted him in the second round in 2016, that has some more upside and I think has a better prospects of actually being in the NHL as of last, or I should say a week and a half ago. Nathan Bastian, he played in 7 games and then got injured in 2018-19, but he looked good in those 7 games.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't get a chance to appear in New Jersey last season, but he did play in Binghamton all last season. He improved his point totals in his third NHL season, so there's signs of positive growth. He reduced his penalty minutes by a bit, which is also a good thing. The panel and Jeff noted that he was a very consistent player, middle six guy, but he could hang on the top line as necessary in Binghamton, and actually named him the team MVP over Sini, which is pretty impressive. And most notably, he is a right winger, Dan, and the Devils just traded Joey Anderson, who I think you and I both would agree had a pretty good shot at making the New Jersey roster
right,
if he wasn't traded. So you have one fewer right winger in the system. You still need to put a right winger on the NHL roster. The Devils haven't signed any right wingers yet. I think Bastian's going to have a pretty good shot at it, and if he makes the NHL somehow in 2021, then he's definitely getting a second contract. And even if he doesn't, I think he's got a really good chance to do so, because I do think the Devils like what they have seen out of Mr. Bastion so far.
And as a right wing, he's also watching the Kyle Palmieri situation play out, where the Devils can give some more room for depth depending on what they do with Palmieri as well.
Exactly. So, I mean, between the position, between what he has demonstrated in his little bit of time, and one other point is that we're talking a lot about Binghamton players. You know, normally when a new GM comes in, Dan, they, you know, they want to do things their way, and, you know, everybody's kind of on edge because they don't know, like, the GM just doesn't know who they are. So they have to almost make a good first impression all over again. Mm-hmm. But Tom Fitzgerald was Ray Sherrod's assistant GM and therefore was following and in control of Binghamton for quite a while. So he's very familiar with all these players here. So that could be both a good thing if Fitzgerald looks at you and says, I like you and I want to keep you around. Or it could be a bad thing if he says, well, I didn't think very much of you and now I have the power to do something about it. So,
yeah.
but if Bastion has Fitzgerald's favor, then, you know, you can almost mark it down in pen that he's going to get a second contract once his ELC ends after this season.
And it's telling that when people do roster projections of the Devils, and these articles are floating around everywhere, and we have a bunch on our site, but when people do roster projections of the Devils, there are a lot of different projections that list Bastion on the main roster. Obviously, this is before the Devils draft or make any moves, but the fact that he's there in a lot of cases is very telling about how, you know, people close to the organization and with access to the organization know the Devils feel about him. I think that's an indicator as well that, you know, even people close to the team can understand that they value Bastion a little more highly than some of these other prospects.
Yes. And I think another good sign of whether or not they value a player is when they send him out to loan. Mm-hmm. Because we've seen a couple of that throughout the league, you know, without an AHL season, without the certainty of whether there will be one. Some teams have been able to loan players out to Europe where they are playing right now. And I think that's a good sign because there is value to say, look, I don't want you to sit around. I don't want you to have to, you know, learn a new style or anything, but I want you to play. So if you're willing to go, please go. And they've done that with three other forwards on this list here that I want to touch on. Mm-hmm. I'm going to touch on the another right winger who I think his odds also improved with the Anderson trade is Marian Studenic, mm-hmm. who's currently playing with HC Slovan Bratislava in the Slovakian Tipsport Liga. Mm-hmm. He didn't have a very good season. Well, let me rephrase that. He didn't have a good first half of last season with Binghamton. He was rated poorly. He wasn't productive. However, he got hot. He put up 15 out of his 17 points last season in a span from January 17th to February 29th. The panel was much more favorable of them. They were saying, oh, we think this is the real Studenic. So I think the Devils want to keep the good times rolling and see, okay, we want you to keep playing. We want you to keep doing well. He had a goal and three assists in four games so far, which is a good start to his campaign. I think between the fact that the Devils are now down another right winger and the fact that he did send him out to Slovakia to keep playing, I think there's a good chance they're going to want to keep him around for just at least a little while longer. I don't think Studenic is definitely the top right winger coming out of Binghamton, if necessary. No. I think that's definitely Bastion. But I think just based on position and based on the fact that they did loan him out, I think those are good signs that they like what they see so far. And, you know, they're not going to give up on him once his ELC ends.
Yeah, and it's the loan situation is very interesting, too, because obviously the quality of league that the players are loaned out to varies vastly between, let's say, you know, the Finnish top league, the Slovakian top league, Swedish top league. There's a lot of differences there. So you want him for a league like the Slovakian top league, you want him to perform pretty close to the top of what you would expect him to. Like, you want him to realize what potential you see in him there, because otherwise it's just really not going to translate over when he comes back. He may be fully used to the North American game already, but the quality of play has to be, like, significantly below what he's seen already.
True, but it goes back to, you know, the general principle of development is it's better that you're playing somewhere as opposed to playing not at all.
Yes.
And so, yeah, the quality is definitely going to be different, and you do have to contend with the reality of having to switch back to North American style, switch back to what you can and can't get away with, switch back to the smaller ice. But given that Studenic has witnessed it already, it might be easier to transition back, mm-hmm. rather than doing it for the first time. So we'll see. But another player who's going to go through the same thing, who jumped right into the AHL after being drafted, he was an overage draft pick back in 2018, is Yegor Sharangovich, who's currently playing with Dynamo Minsk. And I did not know this, Dan, but, you know, with the KHL, especially in Russian leagues, you know, they seem to have this bias against younger players. It's almost as if, hey, you're under the age of 23. I hope you like your 10 minutes per game. However, between the COVID-19 panic shortening some rosters and also just some, you know, some, not every team is built like that. Not every team, Ska St. Petersburg, where they can be very judicious with their minutes here. Some teams kind of have to give it to whomever they have. But he is averaging 18 minutes and 15 seconds per game with Dynamo Minsk. And it's, they've played 14 games when I wrote this up on Sunday. So that's a lot of minutes for a 22-year-old player.
Yeah.
And he's playing center, too. Like, he's not a winger there. He's taken 169 faceoffs. Granted, he's not won most of them, but he's like a top-two center in the KHL, which is rather impressive for a guy who is, just kind of in, you know, he was only moved up to the top line because he had good chemistry with Joey Anderson and Ben Street for a little bit, but he was mostly, like, in the middle of Binghamton's lineup. So this is a rather surprising development.
Like, it's cool that he gets that opportunity, but you have to still remember the factors that you said in terms of COVID-19 has shortened some of the rosters in the KHL significantly. It's the same reason that Shakir Mukhamudulin is getting first or second pairing minutes in Ufa. There's a lot of players missing there that would normally be there, but you have to seize your opportunities when they're given to you. So there's not much more, you know, there's not much more Sharangovich could do to influence the coach's decision except just play well. And Ideally he does do that. But again, it's that center depth that comes creeping in as an issue again. It's worth seeing how the new ones develop. If they like him in Binghamton and they think his game can eventually translate as someone who does fill those spots when the Devils do get injuries, when New Jersey Devils get injuries, then sure, why not? If he's getting experience playing in the KHL, which is very different than the Slovakian top league, that's a different story entirely.
Yeah, the KHL is arguably Europe's best league. So, I mean, It's not like no disrespect to all the Slovakian supporters out there, but the KHL is a better league. Like, I mean, straight up, it's just a better league. And you could argue the KHL is a better league than the AHL, too, just in terms of raw talent. So, you know, it depends on how the Devils are monitoring their loanees, but I got to think they're pretty happy with the fact that Sharangovich isn't just playing in Minsk, but he's playing big minutes at Minsk and arguably more minutes than he was getting in Binghamton. So I think based on that, he's a good candidate to be re-signed, even if he has to spend the entire 2020-2021 campaign in Belarus. And then the last guy for the forwards under contract is the main return for the Sami Vatanen deal, Jani Kuokkanen, who's currently hanging out with Karpat in Liga. He's averaging 13 minutes per game. He's a left wing, being used as a left winger, not as a center. In five games so far, he's got a goal, two assists, and eight shots. Okay, I wish I could see him shoot the puck a little more, but it is what it is. But this is a guy that he was traded primarily because he just didn't get an opportunity in Carolina. Like, there was just too many forwards ahead of him. He was doing very well in Charlotte. He was very productive in Charlotte. And he caught fire quickly when he joined Binghamton. He made one appearance in New Jersey. I'd like to think if the pandemic didn't shut down last season, he would have played much more with New Jersey.
Definitely.
I have a lot of hope for Kuokkanen. I think he absolutely will challenge for a roster spot in New Jersey, either as a winger or as a center. And so I think he's definitely going to be re-signed. I don't think Fitzgerald, because remember, Fitzgerald made the Vatanen trade.
Right.
So I don't think he, you know, this is not a case of he's inheriting a guy, or this is a guy he's been watching him being into for a while that he didn't draft. This is a guy that he went out and acquired in a deal. So I think, you know, short of Kuokkanen having a terrible time in Karpat, or he just has a terrible 2020-2021 in general, he's going to get another contract once this year ends.
Yeah.
He's just going to get another contract.
Charles
not going to give up on him.
You know, based on what I said about Bastion being slotted into the Devils roster in a lot of projections, Kuokkanen is in all of them. So, you know, they definitely expect him to be in New Jersey sooner rather than later. He was, like you said, that main piece in the Sami Vatanen trade. The pick was whatever it was, like
it was a conditional. It was just a very weird conditional pick.
Yeah, so bizarrely and specifically conditional, which the Devils did cash in on to some degree. But Kwakkanen was the main piece here, and it was some good work by Fitzgerald, as assessed by everyone. I think it can only be called good work if the people really expect him to play in the NHL. So yeah, he has to get another contract, and he will definitely get a chance to show something, as he was that quad, that quad A player in Carolina, and they have a much tougher path to get to the NHL as it stands now than the Devils.
Yeah. Okay. So speaking of tough paths, Dan, there are four players whose draft rights are going to end after season, and it's tough because two of them are playing in the O are OHL players, and currently, right now, there is no OHL season. Like,
Right.
there is no announcement of there being an OHL season. We briefly touched on this last week that the Ontario Minister of Sport said you can have a season if there's no body checking or physical contact, which my interpretation is you're not having a season right now. And the other two, one is a college player, so who knows if the Big Ten hockey season will get off the ground. They're trying to have a season, but as we've seen with college football, who knows? Infections just pop up at any given moment and just change the system at any moment. And then one other player is an ECHL player. However, he was an ECHL player, but he's now in Russia. Well, let's talk about him first. He has the most contentious and I think maybe the easiest decision here. Nikita Papagayev.
He
Oh
was
boy, do you want me to summarize his seasons, his career so far, Dan?
well, I do know that let's just the context with him is that Devils took a shot on a guy that was always going to be deemed a project.
Oh yeah.
That's the
I mean,
context.
6'6", 216 pounds, fourth round draft pick. You're thinking, ooh, maybe the Devils got a good find here. Oh boy. All right. So he started off in Russia. Then he transferred in his draft, prior to his draft eligible season, to Moose Jaw of the WHL, and he did very well. And then he got traded to Prince Albert in that season during his draft eligible season. And then something just went awry. Like his performance just suffered. Like he wasn't as productive. He didn't play as well. And then after he got drafted, he started the season in the Moose Jaw, and then he was transferred to CSKA Moscow in the KHL, where he split time between the main team, the VHL team, and their junior team in the MHL. And then he was transferred to Amur Khabarovsk, so another organization in the KHL, and stayed there until February. And then he signed an AHL deal, not an NHL deal, an AHL contract with Binghamton. And then he transferred over in February and played 17 games for them, where he did not much of consequence. And then last season, he spent it entirely in Adirondack in the ECHL. He's now currently in Russia with Dynamo Moscow, and he's been splitting his seven games between with three games with Dynamo Moscow and four games with their VHL team. So let me count this here. That's one, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, 10 teams.
That's like cylinder numbers.
And Sillinger was a very good player, Dan. Like
It's Lee
he kept getting
Stempniak
NHL.
numbers.
Stempniak and Sillinger kept getting NHL jobs because they were good enough to play in the NHL. This guy can't has not been productive anywhere since he played in Moose Jaw as a 17-year-old. I mean, I think he's a classic case of you look at the body, you can see some of the talent, but he just hasn't put it any of it together to stick even in, to be stick in the AHL or stick in the VHL. I think the Devils let him go unless he plays out of his mind. I don't think he's going to get signed
He
at
may
all.
be like quantitied out here. This might be one of the case where the Devils have so many prospects that if they see something like that and they see him keep bouncing around, it's just inherently not worth it to use a contract when they have so many others that they could take a chance on.
Yeah, I think Papagayev, I hate to say this about a young player, any young player, but I think he's going to be one of those guys that is going to be a journeyman in Europe. You'll look at his elite prospect profile and go, wow, he could play for 20 teams in his lifetime if he wants to. We'll see. But I know New Jersey should not give him an ELC at this moment. Not at all. Now, the other guys I'm going to say up front, Dan, that I do think they're going to get signed to ELCs, but it's a little more contentious. It's a tricky decision for Fitzgerald for some different reasons. The first one is the college player, Matthew Helixson. He has been a mainstay on the Notre Dame Fighting Irish blue line. He is a very smart player. He's been named to the academic All Big Ten team for 2 years running now. He was an honorable mention for the All Big Ten team, which, mind you, includes Wisconsin, Minnesota, Michigan. It's not like the Big Ten is a small conference, but it's not a weak conference. He didn't put up a lot of points, but he was second on Notre Dame defenders in points last season. He doesn't take very many penalties. He was a seventh round pick in 2017. So, I mean, it was a total shot in the dark. He was always going to play four seasons with with Notre Dame. I do think he could be a victim of the numbers game, but, you know, if you let Sissons go, you let Quenneville go, you might have room for Hellickson just to see what he can do. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's almost like flip a coin with this guy. You know, the Devils do have a little more time to decide on him since he definitely doesn't have to be signed until August 15th of 2021 after his senior year at Notre Dame, assuming we have a senior season.
Yeah, right. Like, this is the factor here, which is going to make it so difficult for the Devils to assess all of their college guys. Like, we have no idea what the college scene could look like.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, just as the same day that where the NCHC announced they're going to do a pod in Omaha, Atlantic Hockey has like regional pods going, the Big Ten is going to want to start. And then we find out Yale has six hockey players that are infected, and therefore all of Yale sports is shutting down for a week. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the Ivies will always beat to their own drum. But I think everybody in college hockey is paying attention to stuff like that and wondering, you know, if we get one case, we're going to have to take some drastic actions.
Right.
So it's assuming it's a big case here, but even if there was a regular season, I do think it's going to be a matter of, do the Devils like what they see out of Hellickson enough to say, we're going to move on from Sissons and Quenneville and other players and make a spot for him to see what he can do? Or do they look at the fact that, look, we got a bunch of defensemen coming in soon. He hasn't been that impressive. You know, well, sorry, Mr. Hellickson, but, you know, do your best in pro hockey if you choose to go that route.
Yeah, and that's... There's not much urgency with him. There's not, it's not someone that they look at, let's say, like a Riley Walsh, where they knew they had to get something done with him. Yeah. And once the opportunity was available, then they got it done. And I think Talvidi is going to be in the same boat as that, given what he's shown so far. Although, again, he's also coming off of a pretty brutal injury.
True.
So he has some more work to do to get back to the form that made the Devils very high on him before. And he also, I think, captained the Finnish squad in the World Junior Championship. So there's a pedigree there that Hellickson just is not shown yet.
No, and the Devils have a little more time with Talvidi. They have more time with him since he's got two more years left. Hellickson, again, he's entering his senior year, so... Mm-hmm. It's Fisher Cup bait at this point with him. And now we go to the two OHL players who may or may not be playing at all.
Yeah.
We don't know.
Or playing without hitting, you know.
Or playing without hitting, which for one of these players, that's definitely going to be a problem since that's kind of his calling card. Uh-huh. Michael Vukojevic. Mm-hmm. He was one of the many defensemen drafted in 2019.
Jack Hughes' buddy.
Yeah, Jack Hughes' buddy in Kitchener. He showed some slight improvements last year with Kitchener. He scored a couple more points. He dropped his penalty counts by a couple minutes. Most notably, he had an A on his jersey. So, you know, he's definitely got a leadership aspect. His estimated ice time is still around 21 minutes. So he was getting big minutes with Kitchener, at least. You know, Brock Otten of OHL Prospects, you know, does a review of every team's OHL prospects every year. And he noted that he's very similar to Ball and Okotyuk. So, I mean, he's cut from the same cloth. He's a nasty, defensive-minded, big-hitting defenseman. So if the OHL manages to have a season without hitting, which I don't think is going to happen, I'm not sure what he's going to be able to do on the ice. That being said, there's a logic to saying, look, yes, you have a bunch of similar guys in your system, but you got to give him a chance to see if you're going to hit on one of them. So I think he'll get an ELC just to see, are we going to hit on him just in case Okotyuk and Ball don't work out?
Mm-hmm.
But I think he'll get an ELC, but it's definitely going to be a tougher decision if you don't have an OHL season.
Right.
And the other player, he doesn't have to worry so much about hitting. He had a really bad 2019-20 season. He was just very unfortunate. Graham Clark. Graham Clark was starting his season with Marco Rossi on the top line with the 67s. Dan, could you imagine if Graham Clark played the entire season with Marco Rossi?
Yeah, that would be pretty good for Graham Clark's statistical profile. And also,
he could have had 60 goals.
And Graham Clark, you know, as you mentioned, he's part of that New Jersey Devils feeder program in the Ottawa 67s. So he's very familiar with a lot of the other prospects that are going to make their case to be in New Jersey, including the aforementioned Ball and Okotyuk.
Right. But the big thing here is that he started off the season very well, and then he injured his shoulder during a goal celebration. And it was a re-injury, apparently, and it required surgery, which required him to be out for 4 months. And according to the GM at the time, his response was, "We just lost 55 goals." Like, he was on pace for 55. Granted, it's 9 games into your season, but they were that high on him. He was able to return for 7 games after surgery, and then the pandemic shut down junior hockey. So he only got to play 16 games. Now, there are some promising signs here. He, in his first draft season, he had 113 shots on net in 55 games. In the 16 games last season, he had 66 shots. So he had a much higher rate of shots, which is always a good thing you want to see from an offensive player. His primary point per game rate shot up by a good amount. I really, really wish he could have played with Rossi for the whole season. Again, I really think he could have had a real shot at 60 goals. Right. Rossi could have shattered 120 points, which is what he earned on his own. He just hasn't had a real chance to make a real comeback. I personally think you take a chance on this guy, regardless of the circumstances. You know, he was one of the few offensive players taken in the middle of that 2019 draft class. I like to think that this is a guy with some serious talent. He just needs to be given an opportunity to do so. So I think he's going to get an ELC, even if there is no OHL season. I believe in the player, Dan. I think you should take the risk and give him a contract and see what he does in the pro level. I would prefer to see him get that OHL comeback attempt, but that's in the hands of the Ontario government at this point.
Yeah, we have no idea how likely that is, but he does have a chance to play with some still pretty skilled centers. It may not be Rossi, but he does have an opportunity to get a chance in Binghamton if the Devils afford him that opportunity, where there is going to be some quality at the center for him to take advantage of and for him to score goals off of. So, yeah, his whole thing is that he's supposed to be a scorer. So if he's scoring goals, then everything's going well. But if he's not, then, you know, what are you here for?
Right. But again, he's just got to be given the chance here. And unfortunately, he can't really play in Binghamton this season anyway, because he turns 20 in April. Even if you had a normal AHL season, he was born, unfortunately, on April 24th. So unless Binghamton's in the playoffs and need to add a guy straight out of the 67s for their run, which I don't think they can, it's OHL or whatever. Or maybe you give him an ELC and convince a European team to play him for a couple games. Who knows? It's not a good situation, just like it's not a good situation for all of these guys, because their seasons are either not happening or they're not normal. And who knows if they even are playing, if they're going to be able to keep playing, and God forbid they get infected. Because thankfully, no Devil has been infected so far.
Yeah.
As far as we know.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, there's still a while to go in this thing. It doesn't look like we have turned any sort of corner as cases continue to rise in North America. And
yeah,
you want to call it a third wave, we'll call it the same wave, just with different peaks. Like, I don't think it's any sort of third or anything like that. But yeah, you have to be careful here. And with so much in question, like, who knows even if he'll get a chance to participate in the AHL. Like, that league does not have as many resources as the NHL to potentially host a season. So he may not end up, like, they might have to send him elsewhere for him to get some game experience.
Exactly. And that's the case for a lot of these guys. And I understand this is a bit in the weeds. You know, it's not, again, as sexy as talking about whether or not Palmieri should be extended, and if so, how much and for how long. But these are the decisions Fitzgerald is going to have to make over the course of the next 6, 7, 8, 9 months. And that's part of the GM's job. It's not just looking at who's going to be on your NHL roster and if they can make him better. It's also looking at your organizational depth, because, again, you're limited in the number of contracts that you can give out. So you're going to have to start making some tough decisions, since you have a lot of prospects that are going to need contracts after this season. You have a lot of rights that are going to be ending in 2022. You know, and you might want to sign some free agents. You know, you might want to say, "Hey, I want to sign a player." You're going to need that contract room to do so. So, again, these are, you know, given the difficult times for the world, given the difficult times for the hockey world, I do not envy Fitzgerald's situation. Welcome to being an NHL GM.
Yeah.
They're all tough decisions, and they're tougher than usual. But good luck anyway.
Yeah, this is the kind of thing where all these decisions have to be made not only against the backdrop of a pandemic, but the backdrop of an expansion draft coming up next summer as well, where you have to figure out who you want and don't want on your team and who needs to be protected when they are on your team. So the Devils have a lot of considerations because their prospect pool is so voluminous. There's a lot of different factors to consider here, and the Devils also acquired a bunch of extra draft picks for next year. Who knows if they're going to use all of them, but they
Right.
have potentially even more prospects coming down the pipeline. So this is their time to show something here. Those guys on loan, they better perform in those leagues elsewhere. Looking specifically at the year after that, in terms of players like Jesper Boqvist, for example, and Mikhail Maltsev. But they've still got some time on them. But the players that we mentioned, it was a pretty long list, and I'll be sure to include the names of everyone we talked about in the actual article itself, in case you guys want to look at their contract situations, their stats pages, anything like that. But yeah, some tough decisions for Fitzgerald to make. I definitely do not envy him. But hey, he wanted the job and he got it, so it's up to
Yep.
him now.
Right. So, just as one final point, there was only one little bit of Devils news over the past week or so since we last recorded. Since we broke the Wedgwood news, the all-important Scott Wedgwood, beat was blown up.
Right.
He got signed. The Devils announced some numbers, specifically for their new signings. So Ryan Murray's going to wear 22, Janssen's going to wear 11, and Crawford's going to wear 50.
There you go. That
Did you buy your jerseys yet?
that's the news. If you are out here buying jerseys for any of those players, I respect and admire you and your commitment to giving the Devils money that they don't deserve just yet.
Yeah, exactly. I may want to hold off until, maybe they play a game first,
Maybe
but
Murray is healthy enough that he becomes the new
yeah.
number one defenseman for New Jersey, and we're all happy about it because they got him for a fifth round pick. But who knows?
Hey, I'm not your parent. I'm not your dad. Spend your
Yeah,
money however you want.
exactly. Spend your money how you want. We can't tell you what to do. But if those numbers, you'll see those numbers in New Jersey. 50, I don't think, is a common thread worn by the Devils, because high numbers were formerly not a thing until the end of the Lou era, except with the exception of like Jaromir Jagr. And then the number 11 has a storied history that a lot of us are aware of, and the number 22, not so much. So yeah, I mean, they'll carry on whatever legacy those numbers have in New Jersey. But yeah, if you're spending the money on those jerseys now, then congratulations to your likely family members that are going to be on the New Jersey Devils next year.
Yes. Okay.
That all being said, that brings us to the end of this episode. Thank you again for listening, and keep an eye out for the prospects that are on loan. Their stats are widely available everywhere, and we
Yes,
have a lot of go ahead.
and Brian reports on them every Tuesday. So check out All About the Jersey on a regular basis. Since you are the people that matter, continue checking out the blog that matters
And
and learn about how they're doing.
if you're not paying attention, you may have missed exciting contests between Devils prospects in which, for example, Holtz and Pasic scored goals within 2 minutes of each other playing in the Swedish league, and we were all very excited about it in the first 3 minutes of the game. So this is what we have to go on while we wait for the NHL season to come back and training camp to come back. But that's not the worst thing in the world, and it's always fun to watch some future Devils in action. That all being said, thanks again for listening, and let's go Devils. We'll catch you next week.